A Stone's Throw by Howard Andrew Jones. Narrated by Karen Bovenmeyer. Hanuvar pointed the sword at the assassin's throat. Lie down. Light from the swollen, golden moon reached fitfully into the twisting alley, but there was no missing the curl of revulsion on the assassin's lips as he eyed the stinking cobblestones. Apparently, he feared the smell more than death itself. Slim, mustached, and muscular, he wore the dark knee-length tunic typical of the common folk, though bereft of patches or stains. Here was a man who took pride in his appearance. Hanuvar had dealt with Ceresians before, and they were strangely proud and stubborn. They usually weren't this foolish, though. "Down or die," he growled. At that, the fellow finally knelt, then lowered himself to the ground. Hanuvar kicked aside the sword he'd forced from the man only moments before. Its clang was lost in the babble of voices and the general clamor of the city's festival underway this night in Circe's winding streets, 20 paces, and a seeming world away. He looked down at the fop who'd planned to kill him. "Who sent you?"
I'm just a slit purse trying to make..."
Hanuvar nudged him with a sandaled toe. "Speak truth before I'm bored. How did you recognize me?" The prone would-be killer was silent for a heartbeat. An errant wind brought the enticing scent of roast lamb spiced with red injera root before being overwhelmed by the stench of offal and trash. When the man answered at last, he spoke softly and without pretense.
"I was told exactly what you'd be wearing."
The midsummer air was cloying. It pressed the garish yellow shirt he wore against him like a second skin. Yet he knew a chill. He'd purchased the garments only yesterday, trimmed his hair himself in his room, and left the inn through its kitchen door in the early morning. Who could possibly know what clothes he'd have on? Only a mage. But a mage with those sorts of resources would surely employ someone more capable than this man, wouldn't he?
"Who are you working for?"
"A wizard."
"Does he have a name?"
"Arkif." That sounded like a Faedani. Odd that one of the oasis dwellers would be found in Circea. But then the Dervan Empire had such a large price on Hanuvar's head, it probably lured takers from all corners of the world.
"How many Devani are with him?"
"What?" The fellow tried to look over his shoulder.
"There's no Devani. He's just an old wizard."
Now that he thought about it, the man prone before him hadn't seemed to act as if he were preparing to face Hanuvar Cabera, famed general and weapons master, and a reputed necromancer of such power some Dervani now quaked in dread at the mention of his name. If his attacker had known who he was, surely he'd have attempted something more clever than luring him through an alley with the promise of dancing girls. Hanuvar had followed, so he might learn just how pronounced the opposition was. But perhaps there was both more and less to the situation than he'd assumed.
"Do you know who I am?"
"No."
"Arkif didn't tell you?"
"He just said there was a fit, clean-shaven older man in a bright yellow tunica who would be crossing through the market near the fish cellars at 9 bells, and that I was to waylay him."
"What was to be done then?"
"Eh?"
The Dervan would prefer to catch him alive, but if that couldn't be done, they'd surely like his head in proof, and it would naturally have to be preserved for identification purposes.
"With my body."
The answer was delayed in coming.
"I didn't have any instructions," the fellow admitted at last.
He turned his head on the cobblestones and tried to meet Hanuvar's eyes, revealing a smudge of mud above his drooping mustache.
"I'd have left it here, after I took your coins. Look, it was nothing personal."
This time it seemed that the Dervani really might not have been involved. So, who was? And why?
"How close is this Arkief?"
"Oh, very close. A stone's throw."
"All right. You can show me the way."
"You won't kill me then, right?"
"Probably. Don't get up yet."
After another swift scan of the alley, Hanivar crouched and thoroughly searched the man's clothing. There were scuffed playing cards and coins, a pair of keys, a polished finger bone with the spiraling symbol of the goddess Korva, and about his neck, a plain silver necklace of fine make. He found a well-oiled and decorative sword sheath, a middling dagger, a garrot, and a small throwing knife. He slipped the keys, gold, and jewelry into his belt pouch, then tossed everything else but the knife, which he stuck, sheath and all, through his belt.
"What do I call you?"
"Mekrian."
He put his own knife to Mekrian's side and ordered him to walk in front.
"You won't lose me in the crowd. Don't try it."
Mekrian brushed feebly at his dirty sleeves and nodded before heading slowly out of the alley. His course skirted the market's edge, where hundreds, perhaps thousands, strolled among the lighted tents. Beneath the golden light of the full moon, costumed figures marched to the festival's center in time with skirling pipes and tambours, torchlight tossing their lurching shadows on canvas walls. One heavyset woman wore an elaborately fashioned lobster mask and pincers, and her portly male companion had donned a fish-shaped hat. Judging by the applause and laughter, there were even more clever costumes. It would have been nice, for once, to take in a few simple pleasures, even if he'd planned nothing more elaborate than sampling some of the famous Cerisian mussels. Mekrian stopped by a darkened two-story building beyond the far edge of the market square. A sign emblazoned with a sheep and a loom jutted out above its door. The assassin pointed a manicured finger at the building beside it.
"That's where he lives."
The cylindrical tower threw only one weak square of light from a long, open window in its fourth and highest floor. Vines grew thickly about its third-story window.
"How do I get in?"
Mekrian glanced up at the window, then spoke softly as he rubbed the smudge on his cheek.
"You have the key. I stole it from him. It's the big one. I think it's for the main door."